Welcome to Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana basketball news and discussion, brought to you by the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Join me live at assemblycall.com every Thursday night and immediately following every IU game for our live IU postgame show. And visit insidethehall.com for complete coverage of IU basketball and to join the discussion in the Inside the Hall premium forum. On this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink, Alex Bozich and I are joined by Scott Agnes, who covers the Indiana Pacers for The Athletic. We talk about the NBA draft, Romeo Langford, if there's the possibility for Romeo Langford to end up as an Indiana Pacer. Talk about Juwan Morgan, and then some other guys that Scott has really kind of come to like through the pre-draft process and getting to talk to some of the prospects that come through. And we also talk about, of course, Victor Oladipo's rehab and some of the big decisions facing the Pacers now as they prepare for free agency. And then a few questions about the current Indiana team as well, including a nice little nugget Scott picked up about Joey Brunk, which you'll want to listen to. So all of that coming on this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink with Scott Agnes. Before we get to that, a quick word from this week's sponsor, SeatGeek. Do you ever feel like ticketing websites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? It's like they're so big they can get away with not caring about the customer experience. So what if their site's annoying and doesn't have the events you want? Hello, status quo. The real question is, how easy could it be if those ticketing sites actually cared? Well, SeatGeek does care. Why is SeatGeek better than the rest of those other ticketing sites? A quick look at the App Store shows over 50,000 five-star reviews. How's that for customer satisfaction? And the reason is because SeatGeek delivers a better process. SeatGeek pulls together millions of tickets from all over the web. They rate each deal on a scale of 1 to 10, and then they display these deals on an interactive seat map. So SeatGeek breaks down the details. Green dots mean good deals. Red dots are overpriced. And every purchase is fully guaranteed so you can shop for tickets with confidence. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the fastest and easiest way that I have found to shop for tickets. It's the app that my wife and I use and we want to buy concert tickets or baseball tickets. And that's why it's really easier for me to recommend them to you because I've used them. It works. It works really well. And everything that I just described is exactly how it actually is in reality. And best of all, SeatGeek will give you $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All you have to do is use our promo code. So download the SeatGeek app today and use the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, for $10 off your first purchase. That's promo code BRINK for $10 off your first purchase. All right, here's our conversation with Scott Agnes. Scott, thank you so much for joining us again. How's life treating you over there at The Athletic?
Thanks for the invite. Good to be on with you guys, an avid listener myself. No, things are good. It's a good time of year and an active time of year, right? And it's kind of just ciphering through some of the noise and doing some of your own evaluation and also keeping up with those that, you know, study this stuff all year round, right? Because someone like me, I'm more invested in the current day players than I am the future and college guys, much like you guys, all year round watching this more than most of us.
So we're going to talk about the draft. We're going to talk about Victor Oladipo some, but this is obviously an IU basketball podcast. So let me ask you, I think the number one draft-related IU question that anyone would have for someone who covers the Pacers, what are the chances that Romeo Langford ends up going to the Pacers at number 18?
Yeah, getting a lot of that here in the last week or so. And I think it's because people just don't know what to make of Romeo and, you know, some of the draft boards or mock drafts, he's sliding a little bit, but I just don't see that. I see him going just outside the team or the late top 10 pick. I could see him 10, 11, 12 range. That's realistically, I think where I see him going. Now, if he does end up falling and is for some reason still there at 18, and the Pacers keep their pick because I could see them trading up or trading down. I just don't see it happening. What I think will ultimately happen is, Jared, that Romeo will be gone at that point. And much like 2010, when the Pacers could have had a chance at Gordon Hayward, but Utah drafted him. So they got Paul George. It just works out that he was never there in the first place and they didn't get the opportunity to even draft him.
Scott, as someone who's watched Romeo from the time he was basically a freshman in high school and may have even seen him before that, it's a little confusing to me that you have all of these NBA draft experts that have kind of called into question his game and kind of dropped him down on all these draft boards. I'm curious from your perspective and what you've seen leading up to the to tomorrow night's draft. What do you make of how much Romeo's been dissected as a player and kind of this whole narrative that he's maybe not the prospect that everyone thought he was heading into the season?
Yeah, it's kind of surprised me, to be honest, Alex, in that we kind of knew what he was. I think going into last year, right, we probably would have projected him to go, what, 5 to 7 range, like early lottery pick until this last year. And you could make that strong case that if he's not injured and doesn't, or if he doesn't play through it, that because there's a greater unknown, that it actually allows for him to go earlier and play, teams are willing to take more of a chance on him. But at this point, still, I see opportunities for him at 10 with Atlanta. I know Miami's had him at 13. The biggest question, for whatever reason, Alex, is that fire inside of him, or what drives him, or how much does he love the game? I think those have been the bigger questions surrounding Romeo, both with teams and with media alike. And so those are the questions he's had to kind of fend off and answer repeatedly, rather than, I think we all know he's going to get a shot. It may take a year or two to develop, say, an NBA 3, especially coming off an injury. But you saw him probably more than anyone down there. He was a good three-point shooter, much better than I think we saw this past year.
When you look at this draft, obviously there's tiers, and everyone, I think, is pretty much in agreement on the top two, maybe top three, depending on what happens with the Knicks at number three. But where do you kind of see things maybe going off script tomorrow? Because it seems like every draft we have an idea of, you know, what's going to happen with number one. Obviously Zion's going to go number one to the Pelicans, and Ja Morant's going to go two. Where do you see things maybe getting crazy tomorrow night? Because it's inevitable that all of a sudden Twitter's going to start blowing up, and Woj is going to have some trades and things like that. I'm just kind of curious where you see things maybe getting a little uncertain tomorrow night. And I know I'm asking you to predict the future, but just kind of your thoughts on that heading in.
Yeah, sure. I could see it really about 8 things getting interesting, in part because Atlanta has 3 first round picks, including 8 and 10. So what if they package those two, picked up maybe a fringe all-star or something, that's a player that's more ready to play right now, package that and drop down. And that could throw some chaos into this whole thing. I also think the top three seem to be set. And then I feel like those next three, whatever order you want to mention them in, and Darius Garland, DeAndre Hunter, and Jarrett Culver, those three relatively seem to be in that next grouping before you get to Atlanta's pick at 8. So I think that's where things could get interesting. And also, one of the stunning things continues to be for me at number 9, and that's Washington. They still don't have an executive in place. They're hunting Masai Ujiri, of course, the executive running the Toronto Raptors. That franchise needs strong leadership at this point. Right now, we saw the owner come out this week and say they will not have a new guy in place before the draft, which means the pre-existing group is going to be making a pick when a new executive is going to be in charge in a matter of time. So that's also interesting to me, is where does Washington go with that pick?
As someone who wants to see Romeo end up in the best possible spot for him, I've kind of cringed at some of the projections of him going to Detroit at number 15. I just don't feel like that's a franchise that has a whole lot of momentum going forward with some of the contracts they have and their leadership. I'm curious, in your opinion, what would be, from an organizational standpoint and fit, maybe some of the better fits for Romeo? And do you agree that Detroit may not be the best spot for him to go to?
Well, Romeo just he looks the part of a Pistons player, that a long athletic wing. For example, former Pacer Glenn Robinson III was there this past year, but really did not have much success. So you're right. I'm not sure how I'd feel about him going to Detroit. Orlando's improved here recently. I'm still not sold on them comfortably. If he gets to 17, I really like what Brooklyn continues to do. And obviously, who knows what they're going to be doing here shortly, with likely Kyrie Irving and probably another all-star joining him. You would not want him, I don't think, Alex, to go to Charlotte at 12. We've seen that with Cody Zeller and how he's kind of been misused or gotten lost within the flow of things sometimes. I think Minnesota, to me, would be really interesting now that they have new leadership, a front office that I think is now respected, and a young head coach in Ryan Saunders. So I think a couple of those would be interesting. And then Miami as well. Although their books are not in good shape right now, and they've kind of been irrelevant over the last couple of years, that front office that includes Pat Riley, Andy Ellsberg is their guru in terms of the cap. I think Miami would be an interesting fit as well, as I think he could get a couple years to kind of develop and become the type of player he wants to become while Miami will be on the rise here in a few years.
If Romeo did fall to the Pacers, or even if they traded up a few spots, do you think they would take him? Like, is he a good fit for them?
So we talked earlier this week, I guess it was, with Ryan Carr. He's a former IU manager, in fact, and runs the Pacers scouting department, personnel department. They did meet with Romeo in Chicago. Much like most of the teams in this draft, were unable to meet with him over this past week. And that's just purely because his agent was limiting where he spent his time. And they mostly focused on those teams in that grouping I was talking about, that 9 to 13 range. And that's not unusual. This is very typical. For example, the Pacers' first round pick last year, Aaron Holiday, they expected him to go 12 to 17. And so he did not come in for a workout with the Pacers, yet he was still available at 23. So you could see something similar happen, but that's kind of the context of that whole situation. Now, that said, Pacers are, what Ryan Carr was saying is, what he and most teams are drafting for are the future, is 2, 3, 4 years down the road. So don't get hung up on, oh, he's not ready right now, those sorts of things. Most guys really in this draft or any draft are not ready. That said, if he's available at 18, he would be a fit in that they need that wing defender. They need shooting. And I think that's something he'd grow into. And a lot of what Nate McMillan, the Pacers head coach, has talked about is needing creators, needing guys that can get their own shot. And we know very well that's one great attribute that Romeo obviously possesses. But I just don't see it. I don't think if he's available at 18 that they would use the pick on him.
Regarding Juwan Morgan, I believe he recently had a workout for the Pacers and has been making the rounds. At this point, I don't think anyone expects him to be drafted. Like in most of the, you know, big boards that you see, he's maybe 95th, 96th, somewhere around there, even outside of the top 100. Do you think he's a guy that will get an invitation to Summer League, get a chance? And do you have any indication of whether, you know, the Pacers are a team that would be interested in him?
So with Juwan, I think you're right. It's most likely that he's not drafted. And I think he would then absolutely get an invite, be extended an invite for Summer League. And that's where he's going to have to earn his way onto a training camp roster spot. That would be the next thing in line for him. Possibilities could include a two-way contract, but most likely would be an Exhibit 10 contract, which would allow him to get some guaranteed money, more than, say, a G League player would get. And then he would go to camp with a team. And then, assuming he did not stick, like most of these first-year undrafted guys would not, then they would automatically go to that team's affiliate G League team. I would say that is the most likely path that we would see for Juwan, ultimately. He was one of the 49 guys that the Pacers had in for a workout, and I really haven't got much of a feel, say, if they would bring him in terms of using that draft pick. Highly unlikely, again, because that would be early. But it would not shock me, that said, if they were willing to put him on their Summer League team. Number one, just because of the fan interest, which could ultimately lead to more interest in Fort Wayne, which is where their G League franchise operates. But at the same time, there's a lot of things he possesses. His skill set, his passing ability, his toughness, his defense. Those are all attributes. Those are keywords within the Pacers organization. So right away, that makes me think of him. And you think of a guy already on the roster, like Domantas Sabonis. He has that passing skill set, his vision, his footwork, his skills like that. So that's a player that very much fits what the Pacers are doing. So I absolutely expect him to go to Vegas with some franchise.
Scott, who in your mind are the guys that are in play potentially for the Pacers at 18? I know it depends a lot on who's available, but in your estimation, you know, if there are two or three names that people should be kind of focused in on for tomorrow night that you feel are strong possibilities for the Pacers to pick.
Sure. Yeah. In 18, right, like you said, it's just tough because it's really hard to predict kind of the cluster of guys. I feel like, you know, if you're at 6 or 7, you could probably predict one of two guys that is certainly going to be there. But the grouping that I could see is, I like Alexander Walker from Virginia Tech. He was part of that last cluster of six guys that came in for a pre-draft workout with the Pacers earlier this week. He's kind of that wing, a 6'5 guy with a good skill set. Tyler Herro, potentially. Pacers desperately need shooting. They were actually one of the better three-point shooting teams percentage-wise last year, but they did not take very many, so they could use an upgrade there. And I know the Pacers certainly value that throughout the league. I know Keldon Johnson, I think, from Kentucky also. He was the guy the Pacers wanted to get in here, but were unable to. And again, that's kind of where we see agents dictate where guys go and how they spend their time. Because also part of it is trying to limit the number of workouts. They don't want a guy to go through, say, 20 workouts, because those last 5 to 7 probably aren't very good when you're forcing those a lot. I haven't seen this guy play, but Hachimura from Gonzaga, I doubt he's available at 18, but I know he's a guy the Pacers have seen in person many, many times out west at Gonzaga. So he would be a possibility of forward. And then I think a kind of a wild card for this entire draft, for me at least, has been Kevin Porter Jr. He had some issues at USC. Seems to be a guy that a lot of people have been hyping up that potentially would have been maybe a top 5, top 7 guy, if not for some other issues. Yet, maybe he goes top 10, or maybe he's still available even at 18. He also did not come in for a workout, but I believe he met with the Pacers in Chicago.
Scott, you know, outside of viewing this through the Pacers prism, which obviously you do, you know, 24 hours a day, who are just your favorite players in the draft? Like, not necessarily guys at the top, but guys who, you know, maybe they could be there available at 18, or maybe they're, you know, projected to be second rounders that you just kind of feel like are going to outperform. Like, my guy that I've been on record with is Ty Jerome. I love him. I think he's going to end up being a good pro no matter where he goes. Do you have any guys like that that you've just kind of fallen in love with through this process and just really think are going to do well in the NBA?
So, Jared, the guys that stick out to me generally now have been the guys that come through the Pacers pre-draft workouts, and I didn't know too much about them other than a little research ahead of time and watching some clips on YouTube as well. But then they really left an impression in my mind after an interview. And we're thankful here with the Pacers. They allow us to interview these guys after the workouts. That's probably only the case for about half the teams in the league. Even some teams, say San Antonio, the Knicks, I think even the Heat, don't even announce who they bring in, whereas the Pacers are straightforward with it. They have handouts for us, you know, with their info and averages. But a couple of guys that come to mind that left an impression with me was Admiral Schofield from Tennessee. I just love the dude's confidence and how confident he was in his game and his the growth that he was able to make the last couple of years. Another wild card I see is just being Bol Bol, kind of a guard and a center skill set. He's also seemingly a wild card that some have even said they could see going middle of the first round. Yet I've seen on a lot of mocks where he's, you know, 10 spots into the second round. Wow. And then another guy that interests me, and I might be botching this name, is LeGuince Dort from Arizona State. Just because I really like his story. He's from Montreal, started playing soccer and was a goalkeeper, and then became a basketball player later on just because his friends were. Went to Arizona State, really didn't expect to, you know, move on to the NBA, and then just had an outstanding season. He also really impressed me with how he showed up. And one compliment I gave him was during his Pacers workout, he showed up with bright yellow shoes. Now I go, that's brilliant. You do something to stand out, because I'm staring there looking at my sheet. Other guys are, who's that guy? Who's that guy? Well, you have bright yellow shoes, or you have a different hairstyle. That's one way to stand out. That's something I would do as well. But outside of those, obviously, I'm very curious in Zion. Darius Garland, just probably because some of the recruitment within Indiana and Vanderbilt, for those reasons, interests me as well.
Transitioning to the current team, how's Victor's rehab going?
So everybody continues to rave about how things are going down in Miami. That's where he's chosen to have surgery. It's where he's continued to rehab. And I know the Pacers would like him back here a little bit, but who wouldn't want it under his control? Now, he started running, I think it was last week. But the big thing, Jared, in all this is there's just no set timeline to return. And so I think this is a huge question mark and something that we've got to be tracking here entering free agency is what direction do the Pacers approach free agency with? When do they expect for him to be back, right? Because although with free agency, you're really trying to target and upgrade your team now. But say if Victor's not available till February, or maybe he doesn't play all next season, then maybe you change the direction that you want to go to. Now, again, no timeline, but yet I still expect Victor to return next year. Just probably would not be ready to go at the start of training camp in September, or even for their overseas trip to India at the 1st of October.
Scott, I'm looking at the, I guess, the salary sheet, or the kind of the roster setup for the Pacers next year. And it seems like there's a lot, obviously, that's still going to have to be played out. It looks like, you know, Thad Young's obviously he's a free agent, if I understand that right. Bogdanovich, Collison, Corey Joseph, and what are the big storylines for the Pacers heading into free agency, and who do you feel like are the priorities for them to re-sign from their current roster, and do you see them looking on the outside for help as well?
So yeah, it's going to be a wild free agency, Alex. We've already seen some of this as guys continue to opt out. And as we record this, I've gotten several notifications of guys like Chris Middleton opting out. As you'd fully expect, he's going to command probably a max contract. And he was making something like $13 million per year this last season. For the Pacers, they have seven guys from last year's roster that will become undrafted free agents on June 30th. And we now have to say June 30th, not July 1, because that's when the negotiating period, when agents and teams can officially begin to talk. Although we all understand conversations are ongoing and they've already begun to happen. That's why we have a lot of rumors about Kyrie probably headed to Brooklyn. Those things happen through back channels. And I think the NBA kind of turns their head a little bit because they realize the fan interest it draws. In terms of the Pacers, I think their number one priority is to re-sign Boyan. He was making $10.5 million this past year and will probably command something like $17 to $20 million per year. I know a lot of people have mentioned him, even for the Lakers, and I think that would actually be a really good fit as they try to add shooting as well. But from a personality standpoint, I see Boyan not wanting to do that just because he's a guy that's focused on basketball. He doesn't want the outside noise, the drama, the Hollywoodness that comes with something like that situation. So the Pacers are going to call him first day of free agency and try to get him back. I could see a 3-year deal, very possible. He's 30 years old at this point. And then they'd really like Thad Young back as well, the starting power for the last couple of years, and who's really the glue guy of that locker room. It will all just depend, Alex, on his salary. And if someone makes him an offer that the Pacers just don't feel comfortable matching, that would be, I think, the only thing that would prevent Thad from returning, because he'd really like to be back as well. Has a home in Westfield, couple kids, wife. He's really settled in. And he's also at the point in his life where he's got enough money to live. Now it's more about winning and being in a comfortable environment. Because as we're going through this draft and even into free agency, the thing that I don't think gets talked about enough is fit and valuing fit over, may say, another $1 million or something like that. So fit's really important. Outside of that, I think the biggest area to upgrade will be that point guard spot for the team this offseason. And to my point earlier about Victor, is I could see them trying to run it back just because they know Victor may not be willing or able to push himself and be the full Victor we know this next year. So maybe you bring back a Darren Collison on a 1-year deal at 31 years old and then get your point guard next year. Or I could see them making a trade, or they have a lot of flexibility too, with up to $43 million likely to spend if they renounce the rights of a couple of those free agents if they choose to upgrade the point guard spot this offseason.
Yeah, that was actually what I was going to ask you next about the, you mentioned $43 million potentially in cap space. Is there a scenario you see the Pacers trying to take a big swing at a big name on the market? Or traditionally that hasn't been something that they've been able to do successfully in terms of going out and signing big names. But is there a scenario where you could see them trying to attract maybe not obviously the top guys, but maybe someone in that second tier of free agents?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We all understand they're not going to be in play for Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and Kawhi Leonard. That next grouping is exactly what you're trying to go after hard and target. I think Kemba's probably just on the outside, as he's going to be able to go almost wherever he would like, although he would be an excellent fit, I think, in the backcourt, Kemba Walker next to Victor. But he's going to command a max contract, and the Pacers would be able to do that, and happily would, if they could get someone like that. more realistic, you're probably looking maybe at someone like a Chris Middleton, Ricky Rubio to upgrade that point guard spot. Generally, they're looking off that guy that maybe was undervalued on his current team, and they feel they could help him take it to another level and really maximize his talents. So I think really the Pacers aren't afraid of going after those guys. They just have to be realistic about what they can get. And usually it's that probably that third group from that top.
Indiana fans obviously love it when former Hoosiers play for the Pacers, as Victor does now. Do you see any reasonable paths for any of the IU players that are out there to come back home, so to speak? You know, guys that are free agents like Yogi Ferrell, Thomas Bryant, Noah Vonleh. I think those guys are all free agents. Yogi, I think, maybe has a team option for this upcoming year, and I don't know what they're going to do about that. But do you see any reasonable paths for any of those guys or others to come back?
Likely not, and I'm still baffled by that contract that Yogi and his agent took and why he didn't just stay in Dallas with Mark Cuban in the first place. Because initially, Jared, not to go on a big tangent here, but we all thought he went out of his Dallas contract and accepted the Sacramento one because it was a player option, meaning guaranteed money at worst with Sacramento, but that was not the case. So, and then also he had the California income tax that he was susceptible then because of that. But no, I really wouldn't see that. I could see Thomas Bryant staying where he is. Noah Vonleh is so similar in my mind to Romeo Langford in their story, that they come to IU. By many accounts, felt like it was an underwhelming year. Most felt that he wasn't ready. And I think that absolutely was the case. But at the same time, both Romeo and Noah made the best decision for them. They're lottery picks. You got to go. But I see a lot of similarities in terms of their path to the NBA between those two. But I wouldn't expect any of those guys to come back. In the past, we did see guys like Will Sheehy play for the G League team and others. And again, like I said, I think Juwan's a possibility to play in Fort Wayne if the Pacers decide to pick him up if he went undrafted.
Scott, I actually wanted to ask you about both of those guys, not from the Pacers perspective, but just from an NBA perspective. First, how surprised were you at the year that Thomas Bryant had last year? And second, with Vonleh still being so young, and he was actually pretty productive. I know the Knicks were pretty bad last year. What kind of market do you see there being for him on as a free agent? Could he get a multi-year deal? And do you have any idea of what teams may be interested in him?
Yeah, Noah's an interesting case where I think he needs to value fit more than money or a type of deal. He needs someone to believe in him, go somewhere where there's a great player development staff that's willing to put in the time and work with him. To be honest, I have not explored potential landing spots necessarily for him. But yeah, he hadn't even hit his prime. He'd be like 2 years out of college at this point. So I see him as a solid rotational piece for a team. And it might have to come with a team that's in the lottery just because they have open opportunities, right? Maybe that's staying with the Knicks, or maybe that's going down to Atlanta where they're trying to build a core around Trae Young. I could see something like that potentially. In terms of Thomas Bryant, it was somewhat surprising just because of how quickly it happened, right? Didn't he have a triple-double, I think, at one point that just completely blew up and surprised all of us, even on national TV? But to me, that was just a chance of a greater opportunity. I mean, he started way more than half the games last year and found a team that believed in him a little bit. And I think that's even a contract, looking back at it, that the Lakers have to be shaking their heads a little bit, that they invested him, they drafted him, and then if I remember right, they just waived his contract because they needed the roster spot or cap space. But I could see him continuing to make a good impact in this league, as he's barely even 21 years of age and averaged in double figures last year with a very rough Washington Wizards team that, again, still needs leadership. All they really had last year was Bradley Beal.
A couple questions to close, Scott, kind of bringing it back to IU. Obviously this year, you know, as you're watching the Hoosiers, you know, keeping tabs on Romeo, both just because of the great story that he was and because you knew he was going to be an NBA player. Anybody on the current Indiana roster that is interesting to you in terms of how they project forward potentially as a pro?
A little bit. Well, first of all, I can give you a brief update. I know I was with Joey Brunk recently, and I know he's really focused with his health right now. And I think he's lost 6 pounds. He's really focused on dropping something like 5% body fat. So I think he's really focused about this fresh start and coming in, and maybe he's that guy at the starting center spot. We'll see with all that, right? But that's a good report about where his head's at as he approaches this opportunity with the Hoosiers that he's really looking forward to. He grew up an IU fan, and so he was really eager about this opportunity. In terms of this, Devontae Green has a shot, but he's a little undersized and sporadic, I think, for the pro level. I'd really like to see more of that interior guys, right? The guys like Justin Smith, like Clifton Moore, and see what they're able to contribute. But at this point, I don't see any of those guys necessarily projecting to be, say, first round picks at this point. For me, the biggest disappointment came this offseason when they weren't able to get a shooter, not through free agency, through recruitment. I think that was a big area that needed to be addressed, and they just weren't able to do so.
It feels like free agency.
It does. It really has become that way. And who knows, in 2022, finally we'll get over that one and done rule and guys can just go. And if not, they go to colleges and allow the colleges to invest in them. And they're there 2 or 3 years. That's really what I look forward to. I think this has just become a silly game, right? Where guys barely unpack their bags and really just take online classes at best in the second semester and already start with their agency.
Yeah. Last question, and you know, thanks for that nugget on Joey Brunk. That's awesome. Have you had a chance to see Trace Jackson Davis? You know, either this summer or previously, or Armon Franklin, another guy, obviously, from the Indianapolis area. Have you had a chance to see them? And what are you, if so, what are you expecting from them as their Indiana careers get started?
Yeah, unfortunately, I have not seen either of those in person. I have watched Trace Jackson Davis several times through the streaming apps and just through the Pacer season, all that. That pretty much occupies my time and dictates where I'm at, whether it's out of town or downtown at Pacer games or what have you. I really like what I've seen with Trace Jackson Davis. He's actually training with one of my good friends, Jason Smithers, who also trains Joey Brunk there near around Center Grove area, and positive reviews. It's just all about him being tough, being that defender in the post and finishing with contact, I think, and then potentially even stretching his game out even further, because that's really what we're seeing in terms of the NBA is the position in this league. It's about guys being able to switch everything when it comes to the NBA. And, you know, for a guy like him, I could see him being able to switch, say, 1 through 4, 1 through 5, depending on what position he's put in with that whole thing. And then Armon Franklin, you guys would know way more than I, but to me, he just seems like that typical 4-year guy that every program needs, a good shooter and just a solid player that, that IU can really learn or benefit from having on their roster.
Scott, before we let you go, we were talking a little bit before Jared hit the record button. It sounds like the next couple of weeks are going to be pretty hectic for you. What kind of things can people expect to read from you at The Athletic? What's your plan for caffeine the next few weeks to get you through? And, you know, just kind of give us an idea of what you're going to be working on.
Well, we're recording this in the morning, and after I get off this call, I'll be making my second pot of coffee already. earlier today, I had a long conversation with Ryan Carr, the director of scouting, or player personnel now, and I wanted to do a profile on him. He's, for your audience, they'd be curious because he's a former IU manager. Yeah. He's a guy from Sumner, Washington, and he sent out 30 applications just to be a manager. He knew he wanted to be in coaching or for a franchise, and Bob Knight, or someone on his staff, realistically, was the only one to respond. And that's why he ended up in Bloomington and for IU. And now, obviously, he has a great working relationship with the staff down at IU. Pat Knight is a pro scout, one of a dozen scouts for the Pacers. He previously was a college scout living in Vegas. Now he's focused on current players throughout the league. That's what pro scout means, meaning potential players that the Pacers could pick up through free agency or the waiver wire. But I'll be currently just writing a preview for the draft. Then tomorrow night on draft night, be down at the Pacers facility and get reaction. Hopefully, assuming they make that pick at 18, then we'll meet whoever that is Friday. And then before free agency, I'll probably write that Ryan Carr feature about how he got to where he was today. He started with the Pacers as an intern in 97. And was getting $30 an hour and working at Burger King to make it work all at the same time. It's a fascinating story. And then we'll really, Alex, preview free agency, where 40% about of the league are free agents. And even more of these max guys, potential max guys, are turning down options. Like, I never thought we'd live in a world where Harrison Barnes declines an option to give up $25 million guaranteed. And for reference, Victor Oladipo, an all-star, an all-NBA guy this year, making $21
million. Wow. That
is
crazy.
This is the world we live in now. And yeah. Chris Paul making almost $40 million a year at, what, age 34?
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Scott Agnes for The Athletic. Make sure, as you know, we just told you about a great article that's coming out. If you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, I am. I recommend it. You can read great writers like Scott and so many others. Scott, thank you so much for your time. We'll let you go now so you can get on to that next pot of coffee.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Keep up the great work.
Thanks Scott. Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. Remember to join me and my co-hosts for more IU basketball talk at assemblycall.com and visit Alex over at insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana basketball. If you want to support Podcast on the Brink, here is the single best way to do it. Tell anyone you know who loves IU hoops about us and suggest that they subscribe. Podcast on the Brink can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else podcasts are available. Tell your social media followers, email your friends, text your family members. For weekly discussion about IU basketball, they need to be subscribed to Podcast on the Brink. We'll talk to you next time. Go Hoosiers.